Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast. My name is Gianmarco Segato, and today I'll be chatting with Canadian soprano Simone Osborne, who is currently singing the role of Gilda in our fall 2011 production of Giuseppe Verdi's Rigoletto. She'll be back this spring to sing Lauretta in Gianni Schicchi, which forms part of a double bill with Zemlinsky's A Florentine Tragedy. Simone is a member of the COC's Ensemble Studio, our exclusive training program for young opera singers. In the past, she's appeared with us in Ariadne off Naxos, The Magic Flute, Maria Stuarda, and in countless free lunchtime recitals, and I'm sure many donor concerts, on and on and on. The ensemble gets a good workout here. Welcome, Simone, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Gianmarco, for having me.
Well, we're just coming to the end of the Rigoletto run, and as we record this today, you had your final performance last evening.
That's right.
Yes. And I'm just wondering, now that you've sung the role several times through and a complete wonderful new production, what would be your point of view on what Verdi was trying to achieve with this opera from the point of view of your character or of the opera in general? What are your thoughts on that opera now?
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting. We were so lucky here at COC to work with such an incredible director as Christopher Alden, and he knows the score probably better than everyone in the room. I mean, he knows every word and really delved into what this piece was about. And I think at the end of the day, it's about the human condition. And it's about, as all great opera stories are, whether you're screaming your guts out in these gorgeous Puccini or Verdi melodies, it's all about people and it's all about relationships at the end of the day. And it's actually quite simple. So this piece is about forgiveness. It's about sort of emotional torment and different personalities coming together, and unfortunately, you know, not ending all that well for my character, but it's sort of about the exploration of different ways of life and different ways of looking at life and how those sort of play out for people. And I think that it's unfortunate that Gilda dies, because she's so, I mean, it's great, I get to sing a death scene, are you kidding? But it's unfortunate that she dies, because she's such a good person, and I think she probably would have done a lot of good things if she had made it through the three acts. But I think at the end of the day that the show is about forgiveness and goodness in people, even though there's so much dark misery in the piece.
How do you reconcile Gilda's decision to give up her life for somebody who's pretty unsavory?
Yeah, I will not be throwing myself in harm's way for boyfriend anytime soon. But, I was fortunate enough to work on this piece in the summer at Music Academy of the West, where I've trained for three summers now in previous years. And I went back to work on this piece specifically. And we worked on the third act, the quartet and the trio, with a wonderful stage director named Fabrizio Melano. And he and I came sort of at the very end of staging, and it was a lengthy staging process and very detailed, but at the very end, it was the last staging rehearsal, and I said, well, you know, at the end of this trio, when she's saying, God, forgive them, yes, she means Sparafucile and Maddalena, these people that are sort of quite unsavory and have quite an interesting lifestyle. And yes, of course, forgive this terrible, treacherous Duke who's a cheater and a liar and an egomaniac, and forgive her father who's so protective to a fault that she has no, you know, knowledge of the world, and he's got this vengeance, this vendetta they can't get rid of. But I think she's saying forgive the world, forgive everyone for all of these, for all of their misgivings and all of their mistakes. I mean, she's never seen the world. She's lived literally in her home for her whole life. So this young girl who's got these rose-colored glasses on and has no experience, and then they're ripped off, and she sees the world for what it is, with all of its flaws and all of its darkness, and she thinks, well, if this is the way the world is going to be, I'd rather not be there at all. So forgive them all, and she gives her life. So I think that, for me, helped. It's tricky, because I'd like to think of myself as a strong woman, and to kill yourself for a cheating tenor is not really my way of going out, I don't think. But that seemed to help, you know, that she can't fathom living in a world that's this tragic.
Well, you've touched a bit upon Christopher Alden and the experience you've had working with him. I mean, the production was certainly not traditional, and I don't know whatever traditional means these days. But can you tell me a bit more about the process of working with him and rehearsal, and what were the sorts of aspects of your character that he brought out that maybe you hadn't thought about before?
Well, the lovely thing about working with Christopher is that although he has very strong ideas about what the piece is about for him and what he would like to really illuminate in the piece, he is extremely collaborative. A lot of times when you work with a director with a big vision, they put blinders on. They have their vision, and then that's about it. That's what's going to be put on the stage, and that's what's going to be presented to the public, and you don't really have any say. But even with two wonderful casts, first of all, he dedicated so much energy to working with both of our casts, which was wonderful, because...
And that's kind of unusual sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oftentimes, if you're the second run of a show, or let's say you're at the Met doing a revival, you will only get 5 or 6 days of rehearsal, and you kind of put it on its feet, maybe with new, you know, cast members that you've never met. So it was wonderful to work so much with him. But he, you know, if you have a problem with anything, or if you have a concern about the way something comes across, if you don't feel that the character would do or would do that or say that, he's absolutely open about it, and he will have a dialogue with you. And like I say, he knows the piece so well that it was interesting for me, because some people that know Rigoletto extremely well wanted it to be more traditional. Mm-hmm. Some people loved that it was different and it was engaging in that way. The thing is, I didn't see it as non-traditional, because we had so many discussions about why this was happening this way or why this was being presented that way, that for me, this is a piece, right. You know. Yeah. And it's my first time, so I had nothing to compare it to.
Exactly. From my point of view, Gilda is somewhat unique in terms of all the Verdi heroines, in that it tends to be cast with maybe lighter voices, and there's this requirement to sing, you know, high coloratura, especially in Caronome, but then you have to bring on more drama for, say, the Vengeance duet.
Right.
And from your point of view then, how does this character, or at least in terms vocally, how does she fit into the Verdi canon in general and the other Verdi heroines? I mean...
Well, that's a good question. You certainly know your voices very well, because those are absolutely two of the most diverse parts of the piece.
Yeah.
And this piece almost requires you to be two singers. Mm-hmm. I liken it to Traviata.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's the only other one I can think of that's comparable.
It's sort of, I think it's Violetta light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Training for Violetta.
Exactly. Give me some time. But yes, because it feels like you need to be a different soprano for Act 1 than you need to be certainly for Act 3. Mm-hmm. And even Act 2, there's sort of a, you could almost call the Tutte le feste al tempio a little arietta. And even that, it starts on a G just above middle C and kind of sits on the staff. So I have to warm up a different way at the top of the show for my first entrance than I do in the intermission. In the intermission, I almost need to bring the voice down a bit, even though I put in E flats and things like that in the Vengeance duet. What people have to remember is that these cadenzas and things that have become traditional...
Right.
Especially in Caronome, putting E flats and things like that in there were not written in the score by Verdi. Certainly, that doesn't mean you can't and shouldn't do them, but it's not the voice that sings the cadenza in Caronome with a beautiful bird like E flat is not a voice that is necessarily going to cut through in the Storm Trio, say, or the Vengeance duet with the kind of power that you need it to. So it's a very strange fit, and that's why people that do Gilda, either do it once and don't do it so much anymore or do it a lot in the future and do many of them, because it's tricky to cast. And of course it depends on the house. We're so fortunate here in Toronto to have this gorgeous theater that has even more gorgeous acoustics. So, you know, my mom was here last night and she said she could hear every note. So that's good.
And I understand that last night was also special. Your mom was here.
Yes.
But also your teacher, the legendary mezzo-soprano Marilyn Horn.
Opera mom was here too. Both of my moms were here, yeah.
Right.
She is, I couldn't believe that she came. Mm-hmm. I should precurse this by saying she didn't just come to see me. Our wonderful Rigoletto, Lester Lynch, and her have a long history together.
Oh, okay.
And so she came when she realized that it was the two of us paired together. She made the trek, which, I mean, anyone that knows her schedule these days, she's retired from singing, not completely.
Mm-hmm.
She just told me about a project she's going to be doing next season at Carnegie Hall, so keep your calendars open. And she still has a better high B flat than me. But the fact that she would take the time to fly up here and see the production, we worked together all summer on this piece in California,
mm-hmm.
and she is the most down-to-earth human being in real life, and the most, I mean, we all know, the most incredible
mm-hmm.
singer. So for her to do that really meant so much to me, and it's certainly a night I'll never, ever forget. My first Gilda at my home company with my teacher, Marilyn Horn there. I mean, that one's going to be pretty hard to top.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Great experience for you.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about the opera a lot now, so
mm-hmm.
Why don't we play some music from it? I'm just wondering if there's a favorite moment you'd like to suggest, something which involves your character or not your character, or a whole bunch of them all together.
Well,
what
it's so hard from this piece. It's so good.
There's too many good tunes, that's for sure.
I mean, of course, Caro Nome is so beautiful. It's sort of special to me because just a few years ago, I was in the practice room as an undergrad student at UBC in
mm-hmm.
Vancouver, and I remember thinking, why would anyone write this? This is impossible to sing, and why would anyone want to sing it? This is insanity. And so, you know, the opening night to be able to, in the direction of this piece, I'm downstage center, sort of right in front of Maestro Debus and right in front of this gorgeous opera house, and
mm-hmm.
to look up, it was extremely surreal. So that is a moment that'll stay with me, and the aria is just so beautiful, fiendishly difficult,
mm-hmm.
still not very fair. I would give Giuseppe a hard time if he was around for that one, but Caro Nome for sure, and the Storm Trio, because it's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll listen to Caro Nome now, sung by Iliana Kotrobash. It's on Deutsche Grammophon recording of Rigoletto with Carlo Maria Giulini conducting the Vienna Philharmonic.
Thank you.
We'll listen to the Storm Trio now, sung by Ileana Kotrobash, Elena Obratsova, and Nikolai Gyarov. Carlo Maria Giulini conducts the Vienna Philharmonic.
Forse mezz'ora!
Tende, fratello! E piange tal donna, né a lui darò età! Ma se lei il mio amore divenne il rovello, io volevo per la sua gettar la mia vita! Si picchia!
Quel vento!
Si picchia, ti dico!
È strano, chi è? Quanto attendete?
Sospettate presto fa l'opera compita, anello una vita con altra salvar.
Ebbene, son pronto, quell'oscio di schioni, più che altro gli scudi, mi preme salvar.
Ho preso la morte, se giove nessuno, c'è il perverente di chiedo perdono.
Before we chat about your next main stage appearance here at the COC, I'd like to talk to you a bit about your experience over the past 3 years as a member of our ensemble studio training program, and what has this meant for your development as a singer?
Oh my God, I mean, it's meant everything. I came to the COC after graduating from an undergraduate music program, and I was very fortunate to have done a lot of performing in that program, but you know, I was a baby, and I had a few small professional credits, my European opera debut at Wexford Festival and a couple of things in the States, and I had done the Met auditions and a few other competitions, but really not so much, I mean, to be fair, not any professional experience on my resume. And so to come to a place that was so nurturing and so supportive, and really sort of held my hand all the way through. And then it kind of felt like at Pamina last year, in the spring of last year, that they kind of let go of my hand to let me go and test the waters just by myself. It's meant everything. And, you know, this is the place that I learned what it really means to be an opera singer, and also what it means to be in an ensemble. I mean, and not just a young artist ensemble, but a member of the company, a member of this family. It really is a family. The security guards at the theater wrote me a toy card for opening night, and my makeup lady I've had from the age of 22, and you know, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And everyone's giving you all the dressers are giving you a high five as you walk out on the stage. It's remarkable to go from one of the, you know, small dressing rooms at the end of the hall on the second floor down to the John Vickers named large dressing room right by this, you know, the entrance to the stage. That's a pretty incredible feeling, and to have been given those opportunities in one place and so early in my career, for them to have had faith in me when I showed up here and, you know, didn't really know how to sing. I mean, who knows how to sing at 22? It's meant a lot, and the fact that they've given me all of these opportunities and had this faith in me, I'll never forget it. I will never forget it.
Sounds like it's been an amazing run.
Yeah, and you know, as it starts to come to an end, I mean, yeah. I have a few things that'll take me away from COC in the coming months. So as the season, my final season here, I will have been here for 3 seasons as a young artist. Mm-hmm. They just can't get rid of me. It's very bittersweet. I'm ready to be a grown-up, you know, a grown-up kid that can go out there and kind of do it on my own, but it'll be tricky to leave this place. I'll miss it a lot.
Well, you haven't quite left us yet.
That's
right. And I'm sure you'll be back, but you are definitely coming back this spring, and you'll be singing in another opera by an Italian composer, but a different one this time. It'll be Lauretta in Puccini's one-act comedy, Gianni Schicchi. Now, other than the fact that this role is a good deal shorter than Gilda, I'd imagine. I'm just wondering, what are some of the differences for you singing Verdi versus Puccini? In terms of, I don't know, style or vocalism?
Well, certainly depends on the role, but generally, obviously, this Lauretta is much lower, which is nice, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a different part of the voice. It's different orchestration. It's much less umpapa accompanying of the singers, and much more sort of collaboration and coming together with the orchestra and the voices. And, you know, finally I don't have to die in an opera. It's going to be nice to kind of goof around a little bit.
Well, finally we have a comedy in this
exactly,
season too.
Exactly. But so well written. I mean, this piece is just perfect. It's just perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. Now, our director for this double bill is Catherine Malfitano, who now mostly directs opera, but of course she's had a pretty amazing career herself
no
as
kidding.
A soprano, singing a huge range of roles. Now, I know you've worked before with her here in Toronto. She, I think, was here 2 years ago leading working sessions with the ensemble studio.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering what that experience was like and what you're looking forward to with her in particular.
Well, Catherine is the epitome of a stage animal. I mean, she just chews the scenery, and in the best possible way. She's so inspiring. You can't take your eyes off of her when you work with her. And she talks about her upbringing and how her father used to just experiment with theatrical exercises and things. He was an instrumentalist. And you can certainly see that. I mean, she just has a bag of tricks that is, you know, the size of Texas. I mean, anything, any barrier that you have or anything that's holding you back, she will break that down. And I'm very looking forward to experimenting with her and just kind of playing with the art of being on stage. And of course, she was a wonderful singer and sang Puccini heroines and things like that. So I'm sure she'll have more than just theatrical notes for me, which will be wonderful. And she's just such a kind, you know, big heart as well. So it'll be great.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the character of Lauretta and what kind of girl she is, and how does she fit into all the craziness that we find in Gianni Schicchi?
Oh, well, she's sweet and she's fun and she's smart. And, you know, she's in love with this boy, and they're from different classes. So she's clearly a pretty special girl if he's fighting his family to bring this girl of a sort of lower class into the family. And he's, I mean, it's a tenor and a soprano, so obviously he's fallen head over heels in love with her the first time he sees her, and she's in love with him. But we know how that story goes. But she's great. She's like a little imp, I think. Hopefully we'll be able to play her that way. But, you know, she knows exactly how to manipulate her very manipulative father, who is very bright and quick on his feet as well.
Chip off the old block.
Exactly, exactly. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, Lauretta sings what is probably a tune that is going to be the most well-known of any opera arias to the general audience, O Mio Bambino Caro, which, you know, has been used in countless movies and television commercials and on and on and on. And I know you've sung it quite often, and I remember hearing you sing it on CBC Radio, yeah. Brent Bambury that one time.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, so some listeners may have heard that. But Will it be kind of different to sing it in the context of the opera? Your approach to it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It must be a bit about being a young artist, and maybe it's a bit about being Canadian and, you know, not having too big of an ego, at least I hope not. But before these things happen, I always think to myself, how am I going to do that? How am I going to, you know, first it was Pamina and Achifuls. There is no way I can stand on the Four Seasons Center stage and sing Achifuls. The exact same thought came to my head before Karonome. Mm-hmm. The exact same thing comes to my head for O Mio Babbino. I mean, this is what people wait for. In the piece, and everyone knows as soon as those chords start, dum, bum, 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 you know it's coming.
Yeah.
So you better be able to bring it. And I mean, the lucky thing for me is that we have Sir Andrew Davis in the pit. So with someone of his experience and unbelievable ability, I have no doubt that, you know, he will guide me in the mm-hmm. right direction, and I'm so looking forward to working with him on it. We worked on Ariadne together last season.
Right, yeah.
But this will be a really lovely way of, you know, sort of delving deeper with him, because he's just the most musical human being. I mean, it comes out of every pore when he's down there, and you just feel so safe. So yeah, I think I'm looking forward to it. It's not, now that we've got through Karonome, I think that we'll be able to do the O Mio Babbino, as my old teacher used to say, the training bra aria.
Now, dear, after having said all this, dare I even ask what excerpt you'd like us to play from Johnny Sweeney?
Such a soprano, saying all these things, all of my arias. No, well, of course, O Mio Babbino. I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is, yes, it's done so much, but if it's done really beautifully, it's mm-hmm. the most exquisite 2 pages. It's just 2 pages of
it's
music.
It's so short.
It's
yeah.
so short. Mm-hmm. So I think that, if it's done perfectly, is just a jewel, just a gem. And then also, another sort of two and a half pages of music is the finale with Rinuccio and Lauretta, when they realize that they're going to be able to be together. It's just, but you know, the whole piece is perfect.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
you just get a recording, listen to it. It'll take an hour of your day, and you'll
right.
be. I mean, it's the most incredible piece. Or come to the theater and see it. But those would be my two spots: O Mio Babbino and the finale.
Well, we'll listen to them now. We'll hear O Mio Babbino Caro, sung by Mirella Freni, and it's a Decca recording of Il Trittico. That's the three operas by Puccini, of which Johnny Schicchi is one, and it's the Orchestra of the Maggio Musicale Fiorentino under Bruno Bartoletti.
Thank you.
And we'll also listen to the final duet from Gianni Schicchi, sung by Mirella Freni and Roberto Alagna. So before you come back to the COC in the spring, you've got another important debut coming up, I think, quite soon.
Don't remind me.
And that's Juliette in Gounod's gorgeous opera, Romeo et Juliette, at the Vancouver Opera. So how are preparations going for that?
Well, it's funny.
I'm sorry to bring it up.
I know. What am I? Wait, I got to go. Forget the rest of the questions. Yeah. I got some work to do. No, my mom is in town for a couple of days, and I just warned her this morning. So we finished the show last night. And I warned her in the taxi this morning coming to the interview. I said, so I'm going to have to do a lot of hours every day on this new score. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about shopping? So, you know, this is another piece that I was working on very intensely this summer. So it'll just be coming back to it. But in a very lucky way, we've planned this well, in that Juliet is not so dissimilar from Gilda. And it lies a little bit lower, but it's sort of a sister role. So it's not like going from, you know, I don't know, Pamina to, or Gilda to Mignon or something, mm-hmm. like I have done previously. So luckily, I know all of the notes, and it is memorized. I just need to make sure I go back to it. Mm-hmm. It's always a balancing act, and there's so many things about this career that are balancing act, but one of them is, you know, in this instance, I have 6 days off between our last performance and when I start the first sing-through of wow. Romeo. So it's how much, you know, you want to take a little bit of time off. I won't sing today, but I'll certainly sing tomorrow and make sure that I am singing every day and getting that back together. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast, and you're just grateful for these opportunities to sing, especially this gorgeous music.
That's a great opera. I love it.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
And are there any other upcoming roles or engagements that you can let us know about?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are a couple of exciting role debuts and an upcoming tour of Atlantic Canada in recital this season. And I can't say where things are for next season because seasons aren't announced. And also a project that will take me to a series of amphitheaters that are 10,000 seats plus with amplification, as I told Ms. Horn this morning at brunch when she dropped her soup spoon. So there's some exciting new projects.
Wonderful. But, yeah. Well, we can't wait till those become officially announceable.
Yes, that's right. Me neither.
Simone, thank you very much for joining me today for this podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
For more information about the recordings we've been listening to and the COC's productions, please visit our website at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and season-related recordings online. This is Gianmarco Segato. Please join me again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by DECA, the opera label.